Now, into the fifth day of Allied airstrikes on Libya, Muammar Gaddafi's forces are still attacking the rebels, especially in the city Misrata. President Obama says, though, that the U.S. will be stepping back from its leadership role in the campaign. And there are still two main issues here for coalition forces. Number one, that question of who's going to lead this campaign now and who will they be working with on the ground in Libya, and also, what's the end game? How does this all end? Joining us now, David Loyne, foreign correspondent for our partner, the BBC. David, I'd like to start with that first question. Good afternoon or evening there. In terms of who's going to lead this campaign, it appears that the United States is the only one really talking about the United States stepping back. No other powers that are participating in the no-fly zone enforcement have actually stepped forward to discuss even the possibility of leading this.
Yeah, let's look at why this matters. I mean, it matters practically for the fact that if all these airplanes are flying over Libya, somebody needs to be in control of them. And there have been accidents in the past. There was a British warplane shot down by an American missile in 1991 over Kuwait. The Americans believing the incoming, returning British plane was a missile that was coming from Saddam Hussein. So accidents can happen even in the best coordinated of operations. And if you have all these different air assets, potentially some Arab countries involved, then you need really good command and control. The other reason why it matters is symbolic, though. The political symbolism of U.S. lead of another attack on an Arab country after a war, the Iraq war, which many countries in the region really opposed, is one of the big concerns about this. And President Obama seems to know this better than anybody. So what do you then do? You can't, it seems, have NATO command. That would seem to be the obvious thing to do. The French are not in favor of that. And a number of NATO allies, particularly Turkey, which is a key country in this region, a NATO country doesn't want NATO to be running this, what is seen as a military offensive over Libya. So these things are going to have to be sorted out. And it's really extraordinary situation that you've begun a major multinational military campaign without this command and control stuff being sorted out early on.
Well, there's a who's in charge issue that relates to national flags, David Loyne, that you've described there. But let's get back to the technical issue for a second. Yep. Are we talking about U.S. capabilities which are unique in the sense that now the French are going to be commanding, for example, U.S. AWACS planes that have the radio and radar capability to see all the flying on the ground? And is that complicated because they can't communicate well or something like that?
That might well happen. I mean, it might well be the situation that you have U.S. Very significant U.S. assets, AWACS, you mentioned, refueling planes, which are right, interoperable with British planes, although no other air forces, and rescue, search and rescue. We saw yesterday the crew from this F-15 being rescued quickly. Having helicopters in the air swiftly is the sort of thing which the U.S. can do, and other forces in the region don't because they don't have the ships. So there are two British warships, only four helicopters between them. So you have a number of different assets there which the U.S. can operate. And I think it's as much political as anything else. The U.S. Africa Command, based in Stuttgart in Germany, is the obvious place to govern this from. But just getting a buy-in from all of the countries involved that it should be under that, with the U.S. not wanting to lead it, is the rather extraordinary discussion that's going on at the moment.
We're speaking to David Loyne, foreign correspondent for our partner, the BBC. And David, let's move on to the second question that I listed earlier, which is, although the Allied forces have been clear that they are not coordinating their activities with the ground offensive that the rebels may be leading, they still have to be dealing with them in some way. Do they have gotten more information there? Are they better understand who the opposition forces are and who's leading them?
It's a really interesting situation, this. You know, I think the Libyans themselves are making it up as they go along. Two brigades of the Libyan army defected over to the other side, but they seem to have melted into nowhere. The Libyans are militarily pretty chaotic and politically pretty chaotic. I mean, they don't really know each other. So inevitably, a large number of the leaders of this opposition are well-known figures from the old regime because they were the only people who had any credibility, any political credibility to be able to pull some of these things together. The key leader is a man called Mustafa Abdul Jalil. He was the justice minister under Gaddafi. And Human Rights Watch say he wasn't a bad man. I mean, a report last year said that he was responsible for standing out against arbitrary arrests and detention without trial. So, I mean, a reformer, but within the very limited terms of the Gaddafi regime. Another really important group backing the opposition is led by a man called Abdel Fattah Younes, who is a general, who is the leader of a group called the Free Officers Movement. Now, the Free Officers are popular in Libya because they were the people around Gaddafi in the late 1960s who originally took power, the revolution in the late 1960s, and they're still rather revered as being figures who now believe that that revolution was taken away from them. And, I mean, one aspect of Fattah Younes's importance is to show that that Muammar Gaddafi has carried out black propaganda against him. He tried to kill him, and then last weekend he put out pictures on Libyan state television showing old pictures, showing Gaddafi embracing Younes, trying to suggest that he'd come back into the fold. So, I mean, if one element of the relative importance of those in the opposition is how much their move to the rebel side has annoyed Gaddafi. Certainly Younes is top of that list.
Last question for you. I want you to take a listen to this comment from Admiral Samuel Locklear, who's the commander of U.S. naval forces in Europe and Africa.
Regime forces of Gaddafi have to stop advancing on Benghazi. They have to pull back from Zawiya, Ajubaya, Bizarrata. They have not done that.
He seems to be laying out what Gaddafi needs to do in order for the airstrikes to stop. Any response from Gaddafi showing signs that that may happen?
None at all. And remember, this UN resolution that was passed last week, giving the powers that are involved all necessary means, is a very robust and muscular piece of work. It means that if those forces do continue to threaten rebels in any way, then they can be attacked. And we've seen a number of tanks and armored vehicles attacked. I think there will be more of those in the days to come.
So still no end game in sight. That's David Loyne, a BBC foreign correspondent, reporting to us actually from London, explaining the situation on the ground in Libya. David, any idea the weeks or months before airstrikes stop?
My guess is several weeks to come. I mean, this is not going to be a very quick campaign. It's a difficult job trying to enforce any sort of situation on the ground. It's not going to be fast.
Thanks so much, David Loyne, out of London.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.